This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, June 1st, 2023 edition. And as we usually do with Thursdays, we have Luke Guerrero with us. Thanks for coming.
Excited to be here on the first of many gloomy days in June, I imagine.
Yes, we call it May gray around here. It's definitely been a very, very gray May, and it continues today with June. Usually it clears up mid-June, so it's like half June gloom. At least here down in Laguna Beach. Now, we are here to not talk about the weather, but talk about your investments and your goals and the data and perspective you need in order to make good decisions with your money. And been doing this for over 20 years. It feels crazy and learned a lot. And the goal is to partake a little bit of knowledge to help you take that next step in your own version of financial freedom. And I'm going to blend today's comments with what is on your mind. You know, we have topics and discussions that we want to have, but ultimately the most important discussion is what's on your mind. So you set the table and you are a vital part of this program. So we encourage you to reach out with your finance and investment questions here on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART. And we're going to give you the best viewpoint we can based on all of that data, all that experience, all that perspective that we have. And we do that without bias, right? Try to help you weed out the emotions, focus on the task at hand, and refrain from reacting too much to headlines. Because ultimately, when headlines hit, the move is probably in. And so the temptation to allow those emotions to creep in based on recent returns, based on headlines, based on what your cousin or your brother or your neighbor told you, it all plays into those emotions. And our job is to keep you focused on the task at hand and create a good decision-making process. And not making one good decision, but making a series of good decisions throughout your life so that you can ultimately get to your end goal, which once again is financial freedom. And we want to help you eliminate those counterproductive habits. So we're ready for your questions on the InvestTalk phone line, which is 888-99-CHART. Now, our main focus point looks in the story. When your retirement confidence drops, focus on four key areas. And, you know, with the markets being volatile over the past 3-4 years or so now, really since COVID, right, 3+ years, there's a lot of uncertainty out there. And that means those that are approaching retirement, maybe even in retirement, maybe your retirement's far off, but you are less confident in your ability to get there. We're going to look at some things to refocus on, keep it simple, and try to improve your chances of having a successful retirement. Now, time permitting, we're going to touch on a few other topics. One is in regards to Wall Street's next big play, which is in the, I'll leave it for our discussion a little bit later, but it's in the energy space, and I think it's interesting. Also, we're through earnings season, but looking back on earnings season, the companies are doing a few interesting maneuvers, accounting gimmicks, shall we say, to boost that bottom line. And we're going to look at what they're doing and how that plays into the quality of the earnings that you're seeing on these reports. And then lastly, the vaccine makers are struggling, and we're going to talk about why that is and what that could mean for the space and the broader pharma space as well. So that's what we want to talk about, but ultimately it's about you and your voice bank questions, which we're going to get to. One is on portfolio management, the other is on bonds, and we have all of this planned for this episode of InvestTalk, and of course your live calls as well at 888-99-CHART. Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a nice solid up day, and it was kind of one of those bad news is good news type of days. We had the Chicago Fed PMI at the end of the day, yesterday, kind of showed a pretty bad number. And that fed into market expectations for Fed hikes, right?
Yeah, and ADP payrolls also had showed some that initial claims rose, but kind of undershot forecasts to show that the labor market's not as tight as what people were expecting. I think a lot of the performance of the market today was centered around kind of drawing down of that opinion that the Fed might raise the next meeting. I think the exact opposite is starting to take hold, which you can see in the odds in the Fed futures market.
Yeah, and I remember looking at those odds early yesterday, late, I believe on Tuesday, and it was creeping up to an 80% chance that there was going to be a Fed rate hike in the coming meeting on, what's the date? June 14th, mm-hmm. And just a couple of weeks, less than 2 weeks away now. And now it looks like it's about an 80% chance of a Fed pause. And that's why you saw the dollar down pretty well today. And this goes back to what I always say. A lot of people want a strong dollar and they think a good, strong, powerful dollar is a good thing. Well, it is also a deflationary force. And that means asset prices tend to struggle in that environment. So, you know, today was a very strong example of dollar down, asset prices up.
Exactly. And I think it also goes to show that what you and I talk about a lot, which is to kind of take with a grain of salt what these Fed future markets are saying in the interim period, because things are in such flux and new data is coming out constantly. And you can't rely on 6-week-old data based upon, you know, what the Fed's going to decide 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, it's not just about that lagging economic data, which most people pay attention to, but what is the future of the economy and the Fed? They try to do that. I think they try to look at leading economic indicators, which jobless claims are somewhat coincidental, would you call it?
Yeah,
right. But that's what they mainly focus on, are more of those coincidental indicators. And so what the economic data that we've seen over the past couple of days is showing is that the economy is slowing, I think, at an accelerated pace. And that obviously will mean the Fed laying off the gas of hawkish policy, and that means a weaker dollar and typically higher asset prices. So that was today, but we're going to pivot right to our first voice bank question now at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, this is Isaiah from Dayton, Texas. I'm calling about the stock ticker EXPI, Expedia. Just looking for your thoughts on this stock and an entry point. Thank you.
All right, looking at Expedia, one of the largest online travel agencies, shall you call it, booking services, about a $14 billion market cap. And certainly they struggled during COVID because nobody was traveling, but there's a big bounce back, especially in leisure travel. And they're expected next year, Luke, to earn $10.43, an all-time high in earnings, and is trading at $98 per share. That looks like a fairly low multiple. You know, I think this is a name that you definitely have to consider if you think that the leisure travel trend is going to keep up. Or do you think that a recessionary environment is going to dampen earnings and travel?
No, I think so. Looking at this, right, you see from the profitability perspective, they were pretty negative during the pandemic. And like you said, that's understandable. People were not really traveling. But I think you also do have to remember that although this company does seem to be turning it around at a time that people are spending those COVID savings, there are a lot of credit and debt headwinds looking forward. So I think that's something that you do have to keep in mind and maybe, again, take some of this guidance with a grain of salt, that if the debt cycle does get as bad as some people think it will, this is definitely one of the companies that's going to take a hit because it's cyclical.
Yeah. Now, one thing I really like about this business, though, is that they don't have much debt at all on their balance sheet. So not a leveraged balance sheet. So you get into tough economic times, it's not like they're going to default on some major debt load. So that's one thing I like. And that they issued a bunch of shares during COVID, which is once again, understandable, but they've been reversing that. They've been buying that back. Their shares exploded from 141 million shares outstanding in early 2020, all the way to a high of about 160 million. Now it's back down to 148. So they're using that cash flow, that nice free cash flow, which right now is about 2.8 billion trailing 12 months, that is still very robust, and they don't have debt to pay back really. So what else are they going to do with it? They're not paying a dividend. So they're buying back shares. And so I kind of like the makeup of this company, but as you said, Luke, there is some economic risk there. And the chart is starting to firm up. So, and it's been finding support in this 80 to 90 or $80 to $100 range. I actually kind of like this.
I do too, because again, I think what I was talking about is more emblematic of the sector in general, but there are certainly opportunities within that sector. And this kind of looks like one of them where this could be a good choice.
I agree. Now we're going to a quick break. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your question on the InvestTalk Voice Bank. Or if you're listening via the live stream on AM 1220 in the Bay Area, you can call now at 888-99-CHART.
When listener questions are played on the InvestTalk podcast,
how do you guys determine a value stock?
The caller voices are amplified many thousands of times.
Just wanted to get your opinion on JP Morgan and BAC.
How do you see this looking forward?
I'm 25 years old and have a question about retirement funds.
And the unbiased answers from Justin Klein.
That's why it's trading so cheap, because there's a lot of regulatory risk here.
And Steve Peasley.
I kind of like it here. If I was going to buy Tyson Food, this is where I'd buy it.
Benefit the entire InvestTalk community.
Thank you for what you guys do.
That's why 24/7, rain or shine, no matter how simple or how complex, your questions make a difference.
Symbol BKE, what's your outlook?
And InvestTalk is made better by the power of you. So don't forget to call 888-99-CHART. The stock market is constantly changing, and now with more than 50 million downloads, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley reaffirm their commitment to providing unbiased finance and investment guidance here on InvestTalk. 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Gene. He's in North Carolina. He wants to talk about credit unions.
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Justin. And,
of course.
You have Luke with you today, right?
We do.
That's great to hear that once a week you get a Cornell man in there on the podcast.
It's good to have him.
I do have a question about personal finance with credit unions, but before I get to that, I wonder if I could give a quick comment about something on your podcast yesterday.
Sure.
About using a Roth IRA contributions as an emergency fund, a source of emergency funds.
Yeah.
And I think that everything you said is great advice. I think there's one caveat. I believe there's still a five-year rule for starting your first Roth IRA, and where you cannot take the money out for the first 5 years. Just you start a Roth contribution for the first time in your life.
Yeah, that's certainly true. I did kind of forget about that part, but yeah, as long as the Roth has a life of 5 years, you know, that could
be a
good place.
Yeah, that's why some people suggest that you, as early as you can in your job, at the first job, you just take out you start a new Roth IRA, even with $100, just to get the clock started and to whittle that 5 year down so that you don't have that limitation anymore.
Yeah, totally agree. Great point there.
Yeah, okay. Getting to my question about credit unions. So a general question about personal finance. You know, we have a choice in doing our banking, whether it's a regional bank, a big national bank, or credit unions. And I've used a credit union as the primary source to do my online banking and my local banking and using debit cards and so forth. I'm wondering, do you and Luke have any opinion about using credit unions? My understanding is that some credit unions, I originally started using it just so that I wouldn't get dinged with little junk fees that banks sometimes give you.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, those junk fees went away with no minimums and so forth. But I'm wondering, in general, I heard that some credit unions, they kind of specialize possibly in auto loans, or each one is kind of specialized in their own little niche of what they're good at. But
yeah.
I wonder your general, yours and Luke's general opinion about credit unions.
Well, I my personal banking is with a credit union, and our corporate is with a large commercial bank. So I kind of have both experiences. I see no problem using a credit union. You're right that some are good for certain reasons. But I think in today's day and age, where with FDIC insurance and credit union has its own deposit insurance, it's really what's right for you, what your needs are from a branch perspective and a product perspective. And you're right, some are good auto loans. I know mine, we get very cheap. I get offers for, I used to anyway, 1% auto loans all the time. I don't know what they are now, but yeah, you're right. Luke, do you have a comment on that?
No, yeah, personally, I used a credit union to finance my car when I bought my car. That's, I think one of the reasons why people use credit unions in the first place was because they have less overhead, they're cheaper, they tended to offer higher savings rates, right? Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of the reason why people stray away from banks now, there's a lot of more availability outside of credit unions mm-hmm. for saving rates that are really high. So I think that's kind of taken a back burner. But certainly for financing purchases, I think it's a great option.
Yeah, yeah, I think you said there's more alternatives now than there used to be for your banking, like your Marcus's of the world, your Ally Bank, etc., that are online banks. So I think there are some better alternatives, but to each their own. I think they all have their pros and cons. Now we're heading into a quick break. I welcome your finance and investment questions. No question is too simple or too complex. You set the agenda. And Sammy from San Francisco, hang on. You are next on Invest Talk.
Justin Klein is here and ready to take your calls live. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to San Francisco and talk with Sammy. He wants to talk about snow, not the precipitation, but Snowflake, the technology company. Do you own it or looking to buy it?
I'm looking to buy it.
Okay. And what's getting you interested in the name?
It's a company that has been doing pretty good, overall with their growth and how they're acquiring other companies to kind of host their products in the cloud space. So mm-hmm. something that I've been watching, and it has taken a dip right over the last year or so. So I'm just checking in to see if you recommend buying it. If so, at what price?
Yeah, so this is a cloud data and analytics play, basically, and they help enterprises store, warehouse their data and make the most of it. And you're right, their growth, especially on the revenue side, has been very, very good. Now, that's certainly been slowing down. A year ago, revenue growth was over 100% year over year. Last quarter, it was down to 48%. It's pretty much stair-stepped down every quarter since the fall of 2021. And now that's the, I guess you say, negative, that's slowing in growth. But the earnings have started to actually come to fruition. They were losing money basically since they've gone public. And this last quarter, they made 15 cents per share. And they're supposed to make 58 cents a share this year, 91 cents a share next year. The problem, though, is that it's $167 stock. So if you look on even forward-looking earnings, which are currently being downgraded by analysts, that is 170-plus multiple. That's pretty expensive in my mind. And what's, I think, most interesting about this is the lack of really performance, even as a lot of the other cloud names have started to really perk their head up, Luke.
Yeah, no, I certainly agree with you. You know, I think there is certainly some good growth, although it's been slowed recently. They've issued a lot of shares in the past couple of years, which I think is a fine thing to do, especially given that their debt levels are pretty low. That's something that I like as well. I'm just not completely sold that right now is a good time to buy.
And I'm not sold that this is the multiple that you're willing to pay. 23.7 times sales.
Yeah.
We've talked many times before. Anytime you're paying over 20 times sales, it's extremely difficult to grow into that level of valuation. That means the market's pricing in an extremely consistent level of growth over a long period of time. You're talking 30%+ for a decade. Okay. And that's to grow into the current multiple. So I would pass on this. And what I really don't like is if you look at the ratio between snow and the Qs, right? A proxy for other technology stocks, it continues to be in a downtrend. So while the stock has improved, the overall trend and relative strength compared to its peers has actually been pretty bad. So you mix the poor relative performance with the high valuation, I would stay away from snow until you get a reasonable valuation, which I think is far lower than this. At least 50% from here. So I like the progress they're making in their business and the fact that cash flow is now positive, but the free cash flow yield right now is 1%. That's not exactly attractive. So keep on your watch list, watch the progress, and if you can get to a level that's a reasonable valuation, I think this is could be a buy, but not yet. All right, now our focus point today looks into the story. When your retirement confidence drops, focus on four key areas. And this hits on a recent report from the Employee Benefit Research Institute. And it basically says that Americans' confidence to live comfortably in their retirement years has dropped to levels not seen since 2008, which is understandable. 2008 was a shock to the system. It was a deflationary shock to the financial system. And it wrecked a lot of people's retirements and their asset values. This has been a different environment as of late, and it's been an inflationary one. And I think that's the uncertainty that that an environment that most people have not experienced of an inflationary environment is probably what is bringing about this this angst amongst pre-retirees and retirees. So the question is, what do you do when you are unsure about your path and whether you're going to succeed? Now, the first thing is thinking about where you want to live in retirement, and not just doing that 2 or 3 years before you retire, but in advance, many years in advance, so you can find the right time to make that move.
Yeah, no, you know, some places are incredibly expensive. I think you and I live in some of those places that certainly people keep seeing. I think it goes back to this perception that people have, which is the reality of today is going to be going on forever. Mm-hmm. So it makes sense to me that there's a lot of angst amongst not being able to afford things, because when you have ridiculously high inflation, historically high inflation year over year, the perception is this is the norm. Mm-hmm. But it's not the norm.
People extrapolate very short-term data sets long-term.
Exactly. And part of this is getting in the right mindset and understanding that things ebb and flow, like you and I and Steve always talk about. Mm-hmm. But certainly, you know, deciding where you want to live early and understanding the costs is an important step, regardless of what the future environment is going to be.
Yeah, and everyone's lifestyle is going to be different. Some people want to play with their grandkids, and they maybe want a bigger home, right, to have their grandkids stay with them, and that's going to be a big part of their retirement life. Others, maybe they want to travel a lot, so and their kids have moved out. Maybe they didn't have kids, and do you really need a big home? You probably only need a 1 or 2 bedroom, and you're going to be traveling a lot anyway. So, you know, finding the right environment for you to live your retirement years in is very important, and the location is important as well. And then, like you said, maybe trading out of a high cost area and into a lower cost area is something that you can do opportunistically if you plan ahead, but you have to plan ahead. Now, after the break, we're going to get to the other 4 points as well. Now, we're heading into a break, so give us a call now on Invest Talk at 888-99-CHART. At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne. HackerOne.com.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list?
Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for Invest Talk at iTunes, and be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments.
Now, before the break, we touched a bit on how to plan for your retirement years, and we touched on the real estate aspect of upsizing, downsizing, potentially moving from a high cost area to a low cost area. So let's finish this. And the second point is come up with a Medicare strategy. And most people, they start Medicare around the age of 65. There's Medicare Part A, which covers hospital care, skilled nursing facilities, nursing homes, etc. Part B is diagnostics and preventive care. Then there's Part C, which you can get, which covers that along with other coverage areas that you get for private insurance. And then Part D, which is prescription drug coverage. And all of this might matter to you if you are requiring or likely to require a lot of these services, or it may not. But planning ahead is certainly important, and you want to get ahead of that at least 6 months, 4 to 6 months before you turn 65. Now, the third one I think is most important, which is your Social Security benefits. And you can start taking it at 62, but how often, Luke, is that a good idea?
Well, if you can afford to delay it, there's a lot of benefit to that.
Yeah, there's a ton of benefit. Obviously, you get your full benefits at age 66, 67, depending on your age. But you get an 8% boost every single year after your retirement age up until the age of 70, which I think if you have the retirement assets to pull from, it's better to wait till you're 70.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And I think what's even more impactful about running the numbers, when you run the numbers on when to take Social Security, it's that Social Security is inflation adjusted. And so the higher you can start that amount on, the bigger those inflation adjustments are going to be each year. And so the later you file, usually the better, but you need to have a plan for it. And this is something that I do with clients all the time, develop that financial plan. And then lastly, simply save more. I know we talk, Luke, all the time that you could be one of the best investors ever, but if you don't save sufficiently, you're not going to reach your end goals.
Right? Yeah, and you know, this entire thing really is just about planning. About what you have on the horizon, what your investments are, what your ability to delay Social Security is, what your need is of healthcare coverage. All of this is about planning well ahead in advance.
And I think going back to what we started off with, which was extrapolating data points out long-term. Well, that's what planning is about, is understanding the likely outcome long-term. You never know exactly, but understanding the expected outcome of inflation, of earnings on your investments, et cetera, and your savings habits, that will go a long way to kind of quelling some of these fears that oftentimes challenging markets, challenging economic times can really throw into your thought process. And hopefully this gives you a good primer on that, and you can plan better. Right? All right, now on the next Invest Talk, the story behind this question. Is it realistic to expect an aggressive drop in inflation through the end of 2023? Now, one school of thought sees the possibility of a soft landing and contingent on an astute monetary policy. And then we're going to get that story tomorrow. But let's grab a voice bank question that came in earlier from Germany on 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Stephen, Justin. This is Paolo from Germany calling. Today I have a question about portfolio management, and actually a question about which is the perfect or a good allocation, like considering the market cap. Right now I'm invested like in 28% in mega cap, 41% in big cap, and mid cap 15%, small cap 10%. So I was thinking, and I'm trying to get more into smaller and mid caps, and cutting my mega caps, because I think there might be more growth in small and mid-cap names. So, yeah, my question is basically, how do you guys allocate considering market capitalization? Okay, I'm looking forward to hear the answer on the podcast, and thank you so much for all the work you guys do. Bye-bye.
All right, that's a great question. That's something that most people don't think about, right? They just buy names and they look more about the sector and not just about the size of the companies that they're investing in. Now, right now, the better values are in those smaller cap names, but they're also higher risk. You've seen that this year, right? Mega caps have outperformed those smaller caps. So, but does that mean that's going to be long term? Well, the valuations say that small caps are going to be better performers in long term. Small and mid caps tend to outperform large caps, but that's obviously not every year.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of a risk tolerance story, right? Because the only reason why the small and mid caps tend to outperform in the long run is because you're taking on additional risk. So without knowing, you know, personally what your risk tolerance is, it's difficult to say what an adequate allocation should be.
Yeah, exactly. It's hard to say just now and looking at that breakdown. My natural instinct, you sound like a younger caller, would be, yeah, you probably want to trim some of those mega cap names, especially, and invest in some of those more mid and small cap names. Now, of the different market cap buckets, shall you say, typically mid caps have the best risk versus reward, right? The small caps, they tend to, some of them go bust. They're small for a reason. And the mid caps have still room for a lot of growth, whereas those mega caps, most of the growth is probably behind them. So I would probably be coalescing around more of those mid caps, right? Now let's go over to Boston, head over to the East Coast and talk to Santos. He wants to talk about bond funds.
Hello, Justin. Can you hear me?
Of course. Yeah. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. So I read an article on Morningstar about that bond funds are the way to go during the recession to diversify or like to prevent the losses. Mm-hmm. So can I know like what are the bond funds and where can I buy them?
Well, you can. There are hundreds, probably thousands of different bond funds that are out there. Now, which one you buy is depending on what your goals are. Do you want long duration bonds? Do you want short, mid, intermediate duration bonds? Do you want to take a lot of credit risk or not? So you can't paint bond funds with just a broad brush like that. Yes, certainly bond funds tend to outperform during tough economic times. Why? Because interest rates tend to drop and bond funds tend to appreciate. But that's not always the case. For example, right, Luke, a high yield bond fund, that's high risk. It's kind of a quasi equity, right? So it depends on what you're looking for. If you're looking for ultra safe, then you're going to want something more treasury like, right?
Yeah, and certainly if you're looking at where to buy bond funds, I mean, a lot of funds these days, bond funds, equity funds, you can just purchase on exchange. There's a lot of bond ETFs that are managed by PIMCO or Vanguard or any of these large asset managers that are allocating to a wide array of strategies, be it treasuries, high yield, junk bonds. So certainly there's a lot of options out there, and you can purchase them just like you would purchase any equity fund.
Yeah, and I wouldn't shy away from individual bonds, especially if you're buying treasuries. Treasuries, you can go to treasurydirect.gov.
There's no reason to pay somebody to buy you treasury.
Exactly. You can go do that yourself. But bonds can fit in a portfolio in this type of environment, but understand that not all bonds are created equal, and bond funds created equal. Let's go to Andrew in Utah. He wants to talk about the market. Andrew, you there?
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yeah. Go for it.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Good. Hey, so I just wanted to get your guys' takes. I've been kind of caught on the wrong side of this tech rally.
Uh-huh.
I have the inverse of the QQQ, and I tried to get in on a short with Tesla, and then obviously it's been going up. Just wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, what the play is from here. Do you think there might be a reversal, or, you know, when the liquidity concerns after this debt ceiling kind of calms down, do you think there's going to be a reversal on these tech plays, or should I just cut my losses and get out?
Well, I don't think this is an environment that you want to be shorting tech, at least in the short term. Now, long term, I do think many of those are overvalued. But with interest rates coming down, that's really what you've seen, right? And this is really the main driver of where you've seen those multiples re-expand. You saw interest rates really explode higher to the upside all of last year, and they peaked out in the fall. And coincidentally, you kind of had the broader market bottom around that time as well. And the tech stocks really take off after all of that tax loss selling pressure abated in the fourth quarter. You saw that that move to the upside. So in a lot of ways, these are long duration assets, right, Luke? And that means that if interest rates are trending lower, which the 10-year peaked out around 4.3, now we're at 3.6. It's got a low as about 3.25. And the Fed is likely to embark, be near the end of the rate hiking cycle. You know, it's hard to time exactly when this rally is going to peak out. And it can be supercharged when you have a narrative shift like we have with AI.
Yeah, and I think that something that goes along with it is people are tending to invest in tech right now because they don't see a lot of opportunities in the real economy. Yeah. I think people are seeing a lot of traditional asset classes slowing down, and they're reaching for something, like you said, that has had this massive narrative around it. And I don't really see that narrative abating anytime in the short term. Again, in the long term, I think you're going to have some reversion. You see a company like NVIDIA that is trading at over 60 times its sales. Is that high? I think so. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would say that's high for any company, but I think in the short term, what you're going to see is probably some more fuel around this fire.
Yeah, and from a timing perspective, I think it will be when the market starts to realize that the economy is no longer slowing, it's reaccelerating. And I think that's first going to take a Fed pause, because obviously hawkish monetary policy leads to a slower economy. And you've seen that. But as we talked about at the top of the show, the fact that the economic data is finally showing what the market has been pricing in for some time, that, hey, the economy is now no longer growing very strong and it doesn't make sense to raise rates. In fact, the next move for the Fed, I think, is likely lower. It usually takes there's usually a 5-month on average span between when the Fed pauses and when it actually goes into cutting mode. And so we could have that by the end of the year. So when exactly will that be? I think it will be probably when the Fed first makes its first rate cut. I think that's probably when you'll see really that shift to back to the real economy stocks. And that's probably coming up sooner in my mind rather than later. All right, let's go to Bill in Northern California. He wants to talk about AbbVie and Johnson & Johnson.
Hi. Actually, I just bought a small amount of Johnson & Johnson in my brokerage and I sold AbbVie. I'd had it for like 5 years. It was in my Roth IRA. I sold it at the high, which I'd been watching the chart for quite a few months. But I just thought the valuation was out of whack. I sold it at 164. Mm. I was considering getting back into it in my taxable brokerage account. But what do you think about it going forward? There's this news about the Humira generic thing, and how would that affect their dividends potentially going forward, because they've increased their dividends pretty steadily over the last decade, and also that, and then comparing it to Johnson & Johnson.
Well, I think the problems with AbbVie are a microcosm of the industry more broadly. You talked about Humira and the patent cliff and problems with that business. And there are a lot of these drug companies that are seeing patent cliffs, and they're seeing the headwinds of more pressure on government budgets and the fact that maybe they can't charge as much for prescription drugs. And that was part of the Inflation Reduction Act and negotiating Medicare prescription drug prices. And so that's really, I think, the pressure twofold on AbbVie, and that's why it's underperformed pretty extensively as of late. It's not a name that we hold. I do think there's major risk there with the Humira. Now, Johnson & Johnson, a much more diversified business, yeah. Right? Consumer-focused in certain ways. It has medical devices, not just focused on pharma. So you're getting a very diversified business. But is it still a business that you want to own, Luke?
I mean, in terms of where the market seems to perceive its future earnings are coming from, you know, they've been upgraded on estimates. I think if the question is a comparison between the two, I think my camp is definitely in Johnson & Johnson for the reasons that you said, right? That it is a very well-diversified business in a way that AbbVie has just not been doing well.
Yeah, and so my main concern, though, is I think you're kind of barking up the wrong tree. I don't think either are that exciting, right? The technicals look poor. You have those industry headwinds that we talked about. So, you know, it's not one or the other. Sometimes it's neither. right? And that would be really my my summation here. I'd be looking at more pure play medical device companies that don't have those patent cliff issues, don't have the Medicare prescription drug price pressures and all of that. So I definitely would be looking in that area of the medical space if you want exposure to healthcare. All right. Well, thanks for the call, Bill, and hope that answered your question. And after the break, we're going to touch a bit on earnings and the quality of earnings, which, you know, we just got past the earnings season, and we're going to look back and say, how did the vast majority of companies beat earnings? And hint, hint, there's a lot of accounting gimmicks, right? Now, this is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein, along with Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here, is to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Everybody wants a secure financial future. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's talk a little bit about earnings. We just passed earnings season, and it was an interesting one because companies beat earnings in a big, big way. Of the 485 companies in the S&P 500 roster that have reported first quarter earnings as of May 26th, 77% of them surpassed analyst expectations. That's in a slowing economy. And since 1994, the average is only 66%. So the big question is, how did they do it? And they didn't just beat estimates by a little. They did it by a lot. On average, 6.9% above expectations. The long-term average is 4.1%. And the simple answer is some accounting gimmicks, right, Luke?
Yeah, some accounting tricks, if you will. I mean, it's a tale as old as time, right? Because as somebody who studied financial accounting a couple times, and it is as boring as you assume it might be, one of the things that you have to keep in mind is that there's a difference between accounting standards and tax standards, right? Mm-hmm. So just because a company reports a certain income doesn't necessarily mean that's the income that they're being taxed on. So one of the tricks that companies do is in terms of depreciation. And there's two things you can do there when you're taking depreciation expense out, is you can extend the life of an asset, right? Mm-hmm. So you can recognize less depreciation expense and therefore more income after depreciation today, or you can change the methodology behind you do it. You can change it from double declining, which essentially takes out the life of the asset early, takes out the cost of the asset early, to straight line depreciation, which spreads it out more over time. And so what you're doing there is you're making it appear as though you have more earnings when in reality you don't have more earnings.
And Google, one of the behemoths of the market, did this exact thing in its most recent earnings reports. And they came into this year having missed analyst consensus estimates in every quarter for the last year. And it makes sense. The economy has been slowing. The spending on advertising is slowing, especially from the COVID highs when everybody and their mother was advertising online. But you know, so it's understandable that their business is struggling a bit. But when they announced earnings in April, they showed an earnings report of $1.17, where analysts had been expecting $1.08. And since then, Google shares are up 18% since that report. But there are two issues with that. One is what you talked about, extending the life of the assets. And what they extend the life of were their server infrastructure. And they changed the life from 4 years to 6 years. And that added 6 cents of earnings to their earnings report. Okay. And clearly, has their server farms changed? Probably
no,
not.
No assets have changed there. It's just an accounting trick, like you mentioned before. Yeah. And really, you have a double-sided issue here, because essentially when there was an economic slowdown, you had analysts that were just across the board cutting earnings. So as you have the earnings estimates going down and then Google picking up their accounting tricks, you know, there's a wider gap than people expected there would be.
Yeah. And what else? Well, another aspect of their trickery was shifting stock-based compensation, which is definitely something that is underappreciated. But what they did was they moved it from January to March, and that resulted in recognizing less expense in the first quarter relative to the rest of the year. So this is what was now going to be a slight tailwind to earnings report in the first quarter will actually be a headwind going forward for the rest of the year.
This is why you get yourself a good accountant if you're a massive company.
Yeah, and this is broad-based, and there's a score called the Banish M score. This is was created by an Indiana University accounting professor, Masad Banish, and based on that score, it found that a sampling of 2,000 companies, this score was at its highest level in more than 40 years.
Wow!
And usually this is usually high when we're starting a downturn, and so this was kind of if you look at this score, you can really tell whether a company is having quality earnings or not. And I think that's underappreciated, is not just what that headline number is, but how did they get there? Was it true business prospects, or was it accounting gimmicks?
Be skeptical. That's the lesson.
And read the reports. Don't just react on the headlines. Now, I'm Justin Klein with Luke Guerrero. This completes another InvestTalk program. Steve and I thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. Remember to follow InvestTalk on social media. And thank you for tuning in. Independent thinking, shared success. This is InvestTalk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.